Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Do you want to see really at least the revenue potential to be 2 to 3 times as a short-term rental what it would be as a long-term rental? For it to make sense because of those increased expenses.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best Ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm your host, Joe Cornwell. And today I am joined by Kale Delaney. He's the owner of JBR Investments and Management LLC. He's a real estate investor, coach, and consultant, short-term rental expert with a current portfolio of over $7 million. And he's also a co-host in another $2 million in assets under management, primarily in the short-term rental space. Kale's first time on the show, so thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Good. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. Definitely excited to jump in and talk a little bit about the short-term rental game. It's something we don't get to spend a lot of time on here. But before we do that, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, where you came from, and how you got into real estate?
Sure. I'm based out of South Florida. I grew up in the Northeast, but been down here for a while. And I followed the typical career path like most people do. Went to college, got a job, and worked a career as a construction manager for about 15 years. And it was really right before COVID and coinciding with the birth of my youngest son in 2019 that I had a bit of a paradigm shift mentally and just thinking that there needed to be another way, that I needed to find a way to start building wealth for myself and my family and not just for somebody else. Looking at my peers at that time and the ones getting to retirement age, I couldn't see myself doing that for another 20, 30 years. And so I started down the real estate rabbit hole. Devouring podcasts and books. I thought long-term rentals and small multifamily was going to be the vehicle that I was going to use. So that was actually the first investment property that I purchased was a quadplex in a local market here in South Florida. And just based on the time and income goal that I had set for myself, which was basically I wanted to make, it seems to be a common thing, but $10,000 a month net in 5 years was the time frame that I had set. And I thought that was relatively aggressive and my quickly found out that at least with the long-term rentals that I was looking at, it wasn't going to really happen in that time span. So after a little bit of shiny object syndrome, came across short-term rentals just from hearing about it, frankly, on another podcast, both the short-term rentals and the market that I invest in primarily, which is the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee. And a few days later, packed the family up in a minivan, drove 17 hours out there, scoped it out, and 3 weeks later, we're under contract on the first property and snowballed it from there. And like you said, over a period of about 2 years or so, we built up a $7 million portfolio, allowed me to quit the job. So now that's what I focus on currently.
Okay, what was the career before real estate?
Construction management.
That's right. Okay, construction management. So what specifically was it about that career field that opened your eyes and mind into, I need to look at some avenues to get out of this?
I had lost a passion for it a long time ago. And throughout that 15-year career, there were several times where I wanted to get out, but I had no idea how. I did not have an entrepreneurial mindset. I did not ever think that I would be an entrepreneur. And so I was always, okay, what other type of job could I get? And I could never figure it out. So yeah, I just kind of stuck with it. So I had lost the passion for it. It was a very stressful job, very demanding, just not a great fit for me, especially after so many years. And really when my youngest son was born, like I said, and then COVID hitting, it made me really want to change things, try to get a better work-life balance, be able to spend time with my son as he was growing up. So that's what really was the big motivation, the big why for making that big shift.
Okay. How long have you been full-time now in real estate?
About a year and a half.
Year and a half. Okay. I would imagine that some of those skill sets you developed in construction management have translated into real estate, and I'm assuming you do some sort of build outs on these short-term rentals. Is that true?
Yeah, 100%. It was project management. So that's the good thing is that project management, that skill set can kind of transfer over to most anything. So you're doing budgeting, you're doing accounting, you're doing scheduling, you're coordinating with vendors and contractors, all different types of personalities. So yeah, a lot of the skill sets really help transfer over into the hospitality industry, which has helped out a lot.
Yeah, that's great. That was my first thought when you said that is I did the opposite route. So I was in law enforcement, got into real estate, started buying long-term rentals. And then as a result of the types of rentals I bought, I built out a construction company where now my role in my business is project management. And so it's funny how all of those things are so intertwined and the skill sets overlap. But that was the first thought I had when you mentioned that. So I know you mentioned briefly, but what went into your mindset as to determining why short-term rentals, why the Smokies, what helped you develop that specific strategy and obviously grow it so quickly?
Yeah. So again, my goal was I wanted to get out of that job as quick as possible. So I was looking for cash flow and cash flow fast. So after seeing that, like I said, the long-term rentals wasn't really going to get me where I wanted to be as quick as I wanted to be. That's when I was just scouring every other type of real estate asset and trying to see, okay, what can give me the best returns in the quickest manner? And once I heard that podcast about the short-term rentals and they were talking about the numbers and they were talking about that market and the Smokies, it just kind of clicked and checked all the boxes. So that's where I said, let's go check this out. So like I said, this was a few days before Thanksgiving in 2020. So I had that week off for vacation from work, but we didn't have any plans. So that's why we just packed up the minivan and drove out there and scoped it out. And I sold myself on the market and the idea. But again, this is end of 2020, beginning of 2021. The Smoky Mountains is the premier vacation market in the U.S. I mean, that market was on fire. It was crazy. Property comes on the market within 24 hours. I had a dozen offers over asking, and it was gone within a few days. And so on the drive back, I was really struggling a lot because, again, I was sold on the idea. I felt convinced that it could get me where I wanted to be, but I'm a very frugal person, and the idea of paying over asking for something, number one, hurts. And then just seeing how competitive it was and getting into those bidding wars, I had to figure out another way. So it's nothing magical, but what I call my stale listing strategy, right? And so I just started looking at properties that had been sitting on the market for at least 2 weeks. And especially in that market, when something sat for more than a week, it was forgotten about, whether it was good or bad. So actually, that's how I pretty much found all my properties, is just doing that simple strategy.
Walk me through your first deal.
Sure. Well, I'll do the first short-term rental one. It was a four-bedroom log cabin. Everything out there is log cabins out in the mountains. And like I said, I used that stale listing strategy. So it had been sitting on the market for about 3 weeks. At that time, I had just found it on Zillow and took a look at it. It looked good. Had the realtor go out there, he looked at it, didn't see any issues with it. And again, this being the first one, and it was very expensive, it was a bit of a scary endeavor. I think everybody's first bigger deal is a scary endeavor. I'm a Christian, so I actually sat on it for about a week and prayed about it a lot. And ultimately, my prayer was, Lord, if this is meant to happen, if this is planned according to your will, then make it happen. And if it's not, then don't make it happen, but don't let me be discouraged. Help me find the next path. So I sat on it for a week, knowing that this could be gone any second. And the week passed. It was still available. I shot out an offer below asking, and we went under contract.
What was it listed at?
They were asking $700. We bought it for $650. Like I said, it was a four-bedroom. We immediately converted it into a six-bedroom with a theater room because it had a two-car garage, and the master suite on the main level actually was giant. The closet was bigger than most bedrooms. So we added a couple doors, made that closet into a bedroom, and then made the garage into another bedroom and a movie theater. So that property went from a projected income of $85,000 gross annually to now it performs at about $150,000 to $160,000.
All right, so a property like that, and I obviously know it's seasonal, but what is your monthly cash flow on average?
Like you said, it's very seasonal. Annually, it grosses about $150,000 to $160,000, so you're talking $13,000 a month on average, I guess you could say.
Okay, and then what of that do you net?
Overall, across the portfolio, the net is usually around 40%.
Okay. So if it's grossing $150,000, you might net $60,000, $65,000, something like that on a property of that size. Gotcha.
I wouldn't say that's typical. I want to put that out there. And that's the thing. I'm a very patient and conservative underwriter as well. And thankfully, I feel it served me well. I would not say those types of returns are typical, but I've been able to achieve those by being very conservative in things.
Okay. So when you talk about a long-term rental in contrast, a deal here in Southwest Ohio, a lot of investors who buy here are looking for that 1% to 2% range on rent ratio. So if you're buying a $1 million property, you're going to want it to gross at least $10,000 a month in gross rents minimum. So it sounds like in a deal like you're talking about, that would be considered a 2% rent ratio. Now, obviously, I assume there's going to be quite a bit of higher operating costs, turnover, cleaning, maintenance, things like that. So can you speak to that and how that may differ from a long term for anyone who may be unfamiliar?
Absolutely. So when you hear the gross revenue numbers in contrast from a long-term rental to a short-term rental, yeah, it can sound, you know, very significant because it is. But like you mentioned, so are the expenses. So as a long-term rental, oftentimes you're hopefully even going to be able to pass on the utilities and all those things. So your expenses are going to be relatively minimal outside of your debt service and some maintenance and things of that nature. With short-term rentals, you're taking care of everything. So you're going to have a lot more maintenance too, because just think of a rental car. Things are going to get used and abused. Your cleaning, that's one of your biggest expenses that you're going to have. But like you said, the turnover, so it's going to be much more management intensive. So I self-manage all mine still. But if you hire a property management company, expect to pay 20 to 30% of your revenue as well. So that's a big, big consideration. And then, of course, your utilities and all those things. So yeah, your expenses are going to be much, much higher. So the rule of thumb, more or less, and again, it's market dependent, but the rule of thumb is you want to see really at least the revenue potential to be 2 to 3 times as a short-term rental what it would be as a long-term rental for it to make sense because of those increased expenses. And just for my underwriting, again, just another rule of thumb that I use is I want the annual gross revenue to be roughly 20% of the purchase price. So, for example, if I'm buying a $500,000 property, I want that thing to gross around $100,000 a year, plus or minus.
Yeah, again, roughly on that scenario, like a 2% rent ratio.
Exactly, a 2%
rent. Okay, gotcha. Now, how are you financing these? I guess you can start with the first one. How did you finance that deal as your first investment?
Sure. I've used all conventional financing. So, in the first short-term rental or vacation home that you purchase in a new market, typically, as long as you meet the qualifications, which usually isn't an issue, is you can purchase it as a second home and get a second home loan, which the benefit to that is it allows you 10% down. So that's what I did for that first one. And then every other one has been just a conventional 15% down investment loan.
Interesting. Now, if you happen to know these off the top of your head, so you walk through some of the numbers on your first deal, give us an example of your best deal and maybe your worst deal, just a purchase and maybe out-of-pocket cost, and then the current annualized income.
Sure. I would say that first one is actually probably the best, not only because of that easy value add that we did that jumped that revenue up significantly, but it also increased the value. That value add combined with just the appreciation in that market. So again, we bought it for $650. about a year ago. We had it reappraised just to remove the PMI from our mortgage, and it appraised for 1.2.
Wow.
So that's been a fantastic deal.
How much do you think you put into it?
For that renovation, it wasn't even much of a renovation. We only put in about $20,000 to do that conversion, including furnishing.
Cool. So almost doubled your equity and limited out-of-pocket cost.
Yeah, I still think that one was probably my first deal. And for the fact that when we were under contract, we discovered that the seller actually owned the two neighboring properties and they were looking to sell. So immediately after we closed, we negotiated off-market to purchase those two properties as well. So that one really got the snowball going.
And how many properties do you have today?
We have 9 out in the Smokies and then another 6 units in South Florida. But only one of those in South Florida is a short-term rental. The others are long-term.
Gotcha. And now when you were getting into these first few deals, how were you doing the initial down payments on these conventional loans? Was this savings? Were you having partners?
Yeah, good question. It was savings. So I added a whole bunch of things. So again, I worked for 15 years, like I mentioned prior to this, a very frugal person. And I'd been doing, again, what we're kind of taught to do. I'd been saving, putting money in the 401k, the IRA, all that good stuff. So really for those first three, because I kind of look at them as more or less a package deal because they all kind of happened right after the other. It was a combination of savings. I pulled out a 401k loan. For anyone who doesn't know, you can pull out a $50,000 401k loan for any reason. So I did that, and I pulled out a HELOC on my primary home. So I used a combination of those three things for those initial properties. And then really after those first three, since I was still working the W-2, I was just letting any profits from those properties pile up. So really after those first three, those started purchasing the rest.
Awesome. So I know you said you're still in South Florida and you're managing all this remotely. Tell me a little bit about that. What's your structure? What are some of the challenges you've had?
That was one of the other things that drew me to short-term rentals is because I wanted a location-independent business as well, and short-term rental lends itself to that. With the technology that we have today, the software, and really as long as you have a phone and a connection, you can manage it from anywhere in the world. I did a trip through Europe last year with limited internet service even, and I was able to manage my entire portfolio without issue. So softwares are pretty simple too. You have a PMS or a property management software that's kind of your central hub that links things together, your Airbnb and Vrbo platforms. I use Hospitable, and then a dynamic pricing tool. That's your other key one, which I use Price Labs. And that's going to look at the market supply and demand and other factors, and really it updates your pricing on a daily basis, and to tweak it, of course, as well. But that's really key. So those two, your PMS and your dynamic pricing software, those are the main tools that you're going to need. From there, you can dig into the weeds a little bit. There's some other management softwares out there for cleaners or handymen and some other things to help streamline things once you get a sizable portfolio. But for most people, those two things are really all you're going to need. And then as far as your team, if you're going to self-manage it, which is totally doable, even working a job, totally doable, you just need your boots on the ground. So you're going to have a good handyman team and a good cleaning team. Those are your essential ingredients there. And that's the hardest part, right? Finding especially a good cleaning team. You're probably going to go through a few, especially initially. Oftentimes you get one that's great, and then they start growing and they run into quality issues and you might have to move on. That's kind of the trend that happens. But yeah, that's really what you need.
You know, how did you find yours? And I'm assuming that changed over time, as you mentioned, but how did you find the initial ones and how are you finding them today?
The key really is referrals. So before you even start and purchase your first one, get plugged in with the investing communities in the markets that you're looking at and start being a fly on the wall and getting people to know you, even if it's just virtually, because that's going to be your best resource for getting any types of referrals, for when any issues come up that you don't know how to handle. That's going to be key. The realtor group that I work with, they have a very good investor community. So I plugged in right away and got referrals from that. And when I purchase a cabin, I always go out there for about the first week to help get things set up and just get to know the property as well. I always recommend that. Just get to know your own property so you can manage it better, so you can answer questions. And while I'm out there, I'll meet with the team, or if there's any new people I need to interview, I'll take that opportunity to do it.
We'll get back to the show, but first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is, there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield, and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselang for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselang.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselang.com/Joe.
Now, were you buying these furnished? Were you furnishing them yourselves? What was that process?
Yep, buying them furnished. Now, especially those first ones, I tried to do as little as possible in changing things because I didn't have a lot of money. So now when I purchase one, I still purchase them furnished, but I usually end up going in and changing out a lot of the stuff and updating it and doing some cosmetic stuff. So I spend more now upfront when I purchase a property, which it pays off, of course, and the returns on the back end. But those initial ones, yeah, I bought them and I updated electronics mainly. We put in some big TVs and surround sound and smart stuff, and that was about it.
Okay. What was your biggest property you purchased as far as size or cost, whatever metric you want to use?
Yeah, that first one. I purchased a couple others about the same, but yeah, so it was around that okay. range.
Okay, so let's call it maybe 700K all in, and that was the largest investment. Gotcha.
Right, more than that.
Yep. Okay. And in South Florida, I think you said you had a short-term rental. What's that type of property?
Yes, like I mentioned before, that first property that I bought was a quadplex in a local beach market. So we still have that quadplex, and we ended up about 2 or 3 years ago, we converted one of those into a short-term rental. So we have the other three still as long-terms, and that one as a short-term. And the other ones are just single-family homes that are long-terms. But just to give you an example on that, when we converted that, it's a small two-bedroom, about 1,000 square feet, and it was renting for $1,200 a month at that time. And when we converted it to the short-term rental, that first year, we did about $70,000 gross. So a little under $6,000 a month on that one. And earlier this year, we spent about $10,000 on doing some updates. One of our focuses right now is that we're trying to make properties that are more experiences, not just a place to stay. And I think that's really where the industry is heading. So on a few of our properties now, we've created these, what we call mini retreats or mini resorts, where we're offering spa-like amenities. We have saunas, we have cold plunges, we have jacuzzis, we have steam rooms. We're making these places where somebody says, hey, I want to go there because I want to stay at that place, not because, hey, I'm going to this town and I need a place to sleep. So we've been doing that this year, and it's been working excellent. Just another example, we had a property, it's a single family home, one of our co-host properties down here in South Florida, that we worked with the owner on designing it and getting all the amenities in place. And it went from a projected $80,000 a year, if you looked on AirDNA, to in these 6 months that we've had it live, it's already gotten $70,000.
So when you say co-host, is that like a partnership on the purchase, or they own it and you're like arbitraging the short terms?
They own it and I manage it for a fee.
Have you done any of the short-term arbitrage stuff?
No, to be honest, I'm not a big fan of that. Don't get me wrong, I think there's certainly a place for it. But both arbitrage and co-hosting, they're purely cash flow plays. I'm more of the wealth building, which is why I prefer the ownership model. The only reason I started doing co-hosting over this past year, I started doing it and bringing it on selectively, was an opportunity presented itself within my network. It was a friend I wanted to help out and get going. And that was that one that I mentioned that in 6 months, we already achieved what it was projected to earn in a year. And since it's gone so well, just from word of mouth, some other referrals, I've taken on a few more. So that's what I'm doing right now. It's purely a cash flow supplement, but my main focus is still on building wealth through ownership.
Gotcha. Are there any other markets you're underwriting for future purchases, or are you still focused on the Smokies?
I'm still focused on the Smokies. I've stayed out of Florida myself for purchasing additional properties just because, number one, the property taxes are very high. And the property insurance situation has kind of gotten out of hand. So I think it takes a lot of the meat off the bone. Not to say you can't find deals here. I'm absolutely sure you can. But for me, the Smokies has been working very, very well. I have the teams already set up, so it's relatively plug and play for getting another property out there.
Yeah.
That being said, it is not an easy market to find deals. You have to really be patient to find something. So there is another market that I'm interested in that I've been looking at up in Maine that intrigues me a little bit. but I kind of stick with what works. That's one thing that's kind of run as a theme for me is I say success leaves clues. Like, you don't need to be the most inventive person. If you find something that works, stick with it and go for it.
Couldn't agree more with that. And I know in the intro, we talked a little bit before we started about mindset. You want to spend a little time on your mindset, where it came from, and how it's affected your business.
Yeah. So again, I go back to that paradigm shift mentally in 2019 with the birth of my youngest. And when I made that decision that, okay, you know, I'm going to work towards building a business and real estate is how I'm going to do it, it really required a complete revamp of my entire life. And one thing for me that's very important in my life is fitness. I've been a big gym rat for decades. And at that time, I was going to the gym in the evening. So it was get off work, you know, 6 o'clock or so, go to the gym, come home, then it's eat something, go to bed. You don't really see anybody. I knew I couldn't continue doing that. And so I changed my schedule completely to starting the Miracle Mornings, which is a great book if nobody's read that. So I changed to getting up at 4:30 in the morning and doing my workouts in the morning, doing my prayer, my scripture reading, my meditations, all these things before 7, 8 a.m. and then starting the day. And to me, that's been one of the real critical things. And I encourage anybody to really try it because I think it just sets your day up to be productive and more efficient. When you get so much done before most people are even awake or starting their workday, it just gives you kind of a boost, right? You feel better, you feel more energized, you can get started and really plan and attack your day. Again, I think the fitness is super important. For me, it's not only about the physical aspect of it, but it's about the mental aspect. It's a big stress outlet because anybody who's an entrepreneur or has a family and kids, you're going to have stress. So that gym time for me is that outlet, that 1 to 2 hours where I can turn off my mind more or less and just focus and relax a little bit and then get back into the day afterwards. So that's why it's so important for me. I'm still not a morning person. I do not enjoy getting up early, but it's just a necessity.
There's so many things there that translate into real estate or entrepreneurship, but the one thing that I find the most important, and I'll admit I am not a good morning person. I don't like to get up super early, and I struggle with building routines and building habits. But the one thing that I'll say is that when you do stick to a discipline and a regimen of any sort, whether it's diet, exercise, scheduling, time blocking, all those things, those skill sets, when you hone them, translate over and they make you a better entrepreneur. They make you a better investor. So you hear people look at these mindset gurus that you see on social media, and a lot of people think they're kind of a joke. And while I think that there is a lot of that fluff that happens in social media, the way I look at it and relate to what you're saying is that it's not getting up at 4 a.m. and doing a cold plunge and going to the gym that makes you a better investor. It's the fact that you have the discipline to do the things you don't want to do when you say you're going to do them that make you a better investor and a better business person. So that's hopefully the lesson people listening to this can take, that it's the skill set of the habits you create, of the person you become to do those things, that helps translate, not necessarily the actions.
Yeah, exactly. And just to expand on that, with weightlifting, for example, that's my fitness of choice. To me, that does the same thing, because when you're weightlifting, just like you said, you're doing hard things, you're doing painful things, and it's the same with business, because it teaches you that, okay, the way to grow is you have to push through the pain, you have to do the hard things that you don't want to do. So for me, it really just, again, reinforces and teaches that discipline, and you have to have the consistency, right? Because if you go to the gym once this week, twice the next week, skip the next week, you're not going to get results.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's me. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You got to go consistently and do it day in and day out. And the same thing with your business too. So if you can't be consistent and doing the things that you need to do for your business to grow, it's not going to grow either. So yeah, just like you said, it's about developing those habits, developing especially that consistency and that discipline. And that's what's going to make you a better entrepreneur.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, man. I appreciate you sharing your insights on that. All right, let's transition to the best ever lightning round. Are you ready?
Yes.
Give me your best ever book recommendation.
The Creature from Jekyll Islands. That book, it's amazing. It's like, after reading that book, it's like, you know, waking up from the matrix, just learning about how the central banking system works, how money works. So I highly recommend that book to anybody, especially with the events that are going on today. It really helps explain a lot.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Somebody else recommended it on here. I read it about, I don't know, 10 years ago, but it is an eye-opening book for sure. Give me your best ever way you like to give back.
That's an ever-evolving thing. I will say just one recent example is I created and did a six-week financial literacy course for our high school youth group at church. And I got to say that was one of the most enjoyable things I've done in a long time. Just teaching them a lot of those same things from The Creature of Jekyll Island and Robert Kiyosaki, I'm a big follower of his as well. But teaching them those concepts and just seeing those light bulbs going off. And the whole time they were like, why are we not being taught these things? Why is nobody teaching us these things in school? Their minds were just blown. So that was really, really enjoyable. I hope to expand upon that more as well. But beyond that, I guess I'm actively involved in my church otherwise and some other charitable organizations as well. But that's something I'd like to expand on.
Very cool. And give me a mistake you made in one of your deals and the lesson you learned from it.
I think it just goes to relationships. I think as you go more and more into real estate, you understand that it more and more is about relationships. And I think at the very beginning, especially, you know, I was new, I was anxious, didn't have a lot of money. And coming from a construction management background, the contractors out in that area work a little bit differently. So trying to manage things like I managed things when I was working that job did not really go over too well with some of those people I was working with in the beginning. So it caused some friction in some of those relationships. And that area is a very small town mentality, so things can spread and get out of proportion. So that did create some difficulties in the beginning. So that's something that I've focused on a lot more and understand that concept and your audience better.
Yeah. That's a great point. I'm not exactly sure what the phrase is, but it's when you start in real estate, you think it's like a brick and mortar business. You're dealing with assets and physical structures. When you scale in real estate, you realize it's just a people business. And that's where the skill sets become most important, is dealing with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, my last question is, where can people learn more about your company, what you guys are doing, and how they connect with you?
Find me on Facebook or Instagram, Cale Delaney. You can also find us. We have the Fit Investor podcast and community on Facebook as well. So that's part of our mission in just creating a faith-based, Christian-based platform for successful entrepreneurs to talk about how to be fit financially, physically, and faithfully is our tag. So you can look that up on Facebook or Apple, Spotify, all those good places.
Very cool. We'll be sure to link to that in our show notes as well. Cale, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate you diving into your short-term rental business. I know I learned a lot as an area that I haven't done a lot of business in, and I appreciate you sharing it with our audience.
Absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity.
Best ever listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with someone who could benefit from it. Make sure you follow and subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss anything. Thank you all for listening. Have a best ever day.
Hi, best ever listeners, Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.